Welcome to Music for Life, exploring the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is Buckaroo Holiday from Aaron Copland's ballet, Rodeo, and it features both a lot of percussion and a great deal of rhythmic variety. And in today's episode, we will explore one of the most fundamental elements of music, rhythm, as well as the usage of percussion instruments throughout standard music history. In our segment, Sounds of Scripture, we will explore the percussion instruments of the Bible and their function even in leading ensembles. In our Classroom Corner segment, we will discuss the benefits and usage of percussion in the music classroom. And for our Backstage Banter, we will talk with local drummer Jamar Poteet to explore the standard drum kit used extensively in jazz and pop music.
And you're playing multiple layers at one time, so really, it's really a challenge, but it's fun.
Today on Music for Life, music's heartbeat. For the years that I've taught the kindergarten through second grade general music class at Imperial Academy here in Edmond, the first day of music class each year was always fun and unique. After going through the basic classroom rules, I start talking about music first in the sense of rhythm. We talk about how everything in nature has a rhythm, a recurring beat or time pattern or cycle, the orbit of the stars and the planets, namely the Earth's rotation or its revolution around the sun. All of that occurs over a recurring space of time. The months of the year are a rhythm. The seven-day week is a rhythm. There's a rhythm to everything in life. And I tell the little students that there's even rhythm inside of them. Every time their heart pumps blood into their bodies, there's a perceptible beat. And though you might be able to feel this beat on your chest just outside of where your heart is, it's much easier to feel at your wrist or even on your neck just under your jaw. It's always fun having the students try to find their heartbeat this way. Sometimes we call this feeling your pulse, and that's a great expression because we use the term pulse in music a lot, and it's used to describe the exact same thing as our heartbeat, that is, the recurring beat, either that keeps a human life alive or that underpins a musical composition. Now, rhythm in music doesn't necessarily just refer to the pulse of the music, the underlying beat, but can also refer to the varying lengths of notes and pitches, as in the rhythm of a particular phrase in the song Bingo, B-I-N-G-O. That's a rhythm for how to spell that word. Rhythm can also refer to the rhythm section of a particular ensemble, namely the drums or percussion, many instruments of which don't produce a perceptible pitch, but rather an unpitched noise that serves as a way to stress the beat in a particular work. So today I want to talk about some of the interesting elements of rhythm as treated throughout music history. We'll focus on this for the first half of our program. Then in the second half of the program, I want to talk about the instruments whose main function is to punctuate that rhythm, that is, the percussion. We will explore different percussion instruments as they've been used throughout standard music history. First, let's talk about different pulse patterns in music. Most music is organized in a recurring set of stress patterns known as time signatures or meter signatures. It's basically an arrangement of strong and weak beats. However often the strong beat recurs, that's how many beats per bar or per measure, as it's termed musically. So a pattern of strong, weak would be a two-beat pattern. A pattern of strong, weak, weak would constitute a three-beat pattern, and a pattern of strong, weak, 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 strong, weak, weak, weak would be a four-beat per bar pattern. The two-beat pattern is particularly useful for marches. Since humans generally have 2 feet with which they march, left, right, and so on. Here's a march from the Baroque era from a notebook of pieces that Johann Sebastian Bach wrote for his second wife, Anna Magdalena. At the piano, I'll play this short march in D for you here, and you can hear the recurring two-beat or strong weak pattern. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. So that was a recurring two-beat pattern in that march by J.S. Bach. As a march would typically go, that piece has a pretty steady or strict rhythm. It was common, though, in the Baroque era to stretch the tempo at the end, or slow down slightly, to indicate to the ear that the piece was coming to a close, which you heard there. We'll hear another example of this a bit later. If a piece has a strong beat recurring every three beats, that's called 3-4 time. In music notation, the 3 is on the top, the 4 is on the bottom. The 4 indicates that the quarter note gets the beat, and if you look at the fraction of a quarter, the 4 is the number on the bottom. 3-4 indicates that there's 3 quarter notes per bar. This is the recurring stress pattern for dances such as the minuet and the waltz. Let's listen to a minuet from the classical era. In the height of this era, basically the late 19th century with Mozart, every piece called a symphony, which is a large work for orchestra, contained 4 movements. The first and last movements were usually quicker, the second movement was usually slow, and the third movement was usually a minuet. Let's listen to a minuet from Mozart's last symphony. You can count along 1-2-3, 1-2-3 to hear the strict rhythm, and by strict again, I mean steady. The tempo stays rather constant throughout. So this is just a portion of the third movement of Mozart's Symphony No. 41, performed by the Mozart Orchestra of New York, Gerard Schwartz conducting. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. That was Gerard Schwartz conducting the Mozart Orchestra of New York in the third movement of Mozart's Symphony No. 41. Symphonies at this time were usually 4 movements, and the third movement was almost always a minuet, a 3-beat per bar dance, common at that time. So that was an example of 3-4 time, meaning 3 quarter notes per bar, and the quarter notes are the value for the beat. So 3 beats per bar, and you see that written in the music as a 3/4. The time signature that most musicians are used to seeing, though, has a 4/4, 4 beats in a bar, and the quarter note is designated as the note value that gets the beat. In fact, this time signature is so common that musicians don't always see 4/4 written at the beginning of the score. They might just see a big letter C where the time signature usually goes. The C stands for common time. This is the most common time signature in Western music. There's something comforting about the measure's beats being divisible by 2, that is, the symmetry of each bar being 2 beats plus 2 beats. We love the recurring stress of 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, but without it happening as frequently as in the march time signatures of 2 beats per bar, 1-2-1-2. Beat 1 of each bar is the strongest, but by virtue of how our ears hear things, beat 3 has a secondary stress because of where it falls. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. For this meter, I want to play an example of a chorus from Handel's Messiah. You hear a strong beat 1 every 4 beats, emphasized by the lyrics, "Lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be ye lift up, ye everlasting doors." Do you hear the 4-beat pattern? Here it is. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. This is also a great example of the somewhat strict or steady nature of the pulse in Baroque music. However, as I played in that Bach example earlier, it was quite common for the pulse to slow down at the end. And in this chorus, the pulse is quite strict until the very end, where it completely changes into a slow, drawn-out tempo or speed, which really indicates a sense of finality to the listener. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today we are exploring one of the most fundamental elements of music, rhythm, in this episode that I've titled Music's Heartbeat. And later we will explore the usage of percussion instruments throughout standard music history. But that was an example of a 4-beat pattern in music from the Baroque era, a time when a strict, steady pulse was common in a lot of music, but with that steadiness being interrupted by a much slower couple of bars at the very end of the piece to indicate the closing material, or what we call in music the coda. That was just an excerpt from Lift Up Your Heads from Handel's Messiah, performed by the 16. We call that 4-4 time. It's written as a 4 over a 4, basically saying that there are 4 quarter notes each bar. We call the quarter note the beat. Now, when the quarter note is the beat, usually each beat will be subdivided into multiples of 2, either 2 eighth notes, 4 sixteenth notes, or even 8 32nd notes. But sometimes composers feel the beat as being divided into 3 parts. For that, they usually use a time signature with the number 8 on the bottom, like 6-8, 9-8, or 12-8. 6-8 means there are 6 eighth notes per bar, but it almost always means that there are 2 major beats per pattern, and each beat's divided into 3 parts. So counting it feels like this: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, with the stresses on 1 and 4, so it feels like 2 beats per pattern, but each beat is divided into 3 parts. 9-8 time, or 9 eighth notes per bar, would feel like 3 beats per pattern, with each beat divided into 3 parts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 6-8 and similarly divided beat patterns are commonly used in the Irish jig. 9-8 is used for the Irish dance known as the slip jig, now a female-only dance in this art form. And here's a segment of a slip jig from a musical we produced here at Armstrong College called The Book of Isaiah. This is based on an Irish folk tune, In Deepest Sorrow I Think of Home, and I'll count a couple of patterns of 9 eighth notes just to get you started on hearing the recurring stress pattern. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Thank you. So that was a slip jig from the musical The Book of Isaiah, premiered here at Armstrong Auditorium in January 2015. The slip jig uses the 9/8 time signature, which is 9/8 notes per bar divided into three groups of three. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Time signatures don't always occur in such symmetrical ways, though. Composers have been known to depart from the traditional 2, 3, or 4 beats per bar pattern, whether the beat was divided into 2s or 3s. They've been known to use less traditional time signatures. One of the most famous examples is an example I've already played on a previous episode of this program, Mars from the Planets by Gustav Holst. You can hear in this example by tapping your foot to the beat that the strong beat comes back around every 5 beats. This piece is in 5/4 time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Another interesting element of rhythm that Holst employs in this movement is ostinato, a recurring rhythmic pattern that repeats over and over. Ostinato is different than just a recurring pulse, like a time signature. It's some rhythmic or melodic figure that the composer puts throughout an entire section of music. It usually heavily emphasizes the rhythmic nature of the piece. You'll hear the ostinato in this pattern. 1 and a 2, 3, 4, and 5. 1 and a 2, 3, 4, and 5. So that was a little of Mars from the Planets by Gustav Holst, Leonard Slatkin conducting the Philharmonia Orchestra. That was an example of an unusual time signature, 5/4 time. The most commonly employed time signatures, or recurring patterns of beat stress, are those with symmetrical usages of 2s or 3s. 5/4 is a little strange to us because 5 doesn't divide evenly into 2 or 3. We tend to break the 5-beat bars, in our minds, into smaller groups of 2s and 3s. In the case of Mars, we hear 3 beats plus 2 beats. 1 and a 2, 3, 4, and 5. 1 and a 2, 3, 4, and 5 to comprise the 5 beats of each bar. So each bar is asymmetrical in the sense of its subdivisions, 3 beats on one side of the bar, or on one side of the pattern, and 2 on the other side. Composers will use this to help hide or eliminate an overly predictable symmetry to music, getting the listener's attention. Igor Stravinsky uses an unusual time signature in the finale of his famous Firebird ballet. This is in 7/4 time. If you've heard it before, even if you've never counted it, you may notice the asymmetry of the recurring stress pattern. 7/4 is where the strongest beat is every 7 beats, but we might subdivide the bar subconsciously into groups of 4 plus 3. Again, it's a bar that isn't symmetrical because 4 beats are on one side and 3 beats are on the other side. Listen to this finale section. I'll count a couple of groups of 7 to start you off, and then a couple of 4s plus 3s to show how those 7 beats are grouped in the recurring stress pattern. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. We'll be right back. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today's episode is titled Music's Heartbeat, and we are exploring one of the most fundamental elements of music, rhythm, as well as the usage of percussion instruments throughout standard music history. That was the finale to Igor Stravinsky's ballet Firebird, and that was performed by the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra with Simon Rattle conducting. And that was an example of 7 beats per recurring stress pattern. That's an unusually asymmetrical pattern because it's a number that doesn't divide by 2 or 3, and we tend to bunch the 7-beat bars into groups of 4 plus 3 in our minds. Now, we also heard some great percussion in that. Again, we'll talk about percussion in part 2. You heard some drums, and you heard a tremolo from a triangle through those final pitches. But back to the time signature there, you might wonder, why doesn't a composer just write a 4-beat bar, and then a 3-beat bar, and then a 4-beat bar, and then a 3-beat bar, instead of writing 7 beats per bar? Well, sometimes he does, but that takes a little more ink than just saying 7 beats per bar. But composers do change time signatures every bar or every few bars sometimes in their music, and that's a rhythmic device known as multimeter, and we'll get into that in a minute. But before we do that, I want to play one more example of an unusual time signature. This is 7/8 time. It's different than 7/4 in the sense that it's not 7 quarter notes. That's what the 4 refers to. It's 7/8 notes in a bar. And just as 6/8 and 9/8 was more about the major beats being divided into groups of 3/8 notes each, 7/8 time, meaning 7/8 notes per bar, refers to a particular asymmetrical grouping of 8th notes, either 2/8 notes plus 2/8 notes plus 3/8 notes, 1-2-1-2-1-2-3, 1-2-1-2-1-2-3, or 1-2-3-4-5-6-7, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7, or a grouping of 3/8 notes plus 2/8 notes plus 2/8 notes, 1-2-3-1-2-1-2, 1-2-3-1-2-1-2, or 1-2-3-4-5-6-7, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7. You probably sense that that's 3 big beats per bar, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7. But the length of each beat isn't exactly the same. One beat is 3/8 notes long, and the other 2 beats are 2/8 notes long. This particular beat pattern is quite common in Greek folk music. One of the productions we did here at Armstrong Auditorium was a musical on the life of Jeremiah. In a particular dance number where the music is to depict a journey across the Mediterranean Sea by depicting its various cultures, I used 2 Greek folk melodies to depict the Grecian part of the journey, and you'll hear the 7/8 pattern in this example. 1-2-3-4-5-6-7, 1-2-3-1-2, 1-2-1-2-3-1-2, 1-2. Thank you. That was the Grecian Islands section of the song Journey on the Sea, a dance number from the musical Jeremiah, premiered here at Armstrong Auditorium in December 2012. And that was a studio orchestra in that recording, featuring particularly our flutist Parthena Owens and violinist Densi Rushing, local musicians here who did just a wonderful job on that recording. That particular section employed folk melodies from Greece that uses a quick 7 beats per bar pattern. It's really 3 beats per bar, with the first beat equaling 3 eighth notes and the last 2 beats equaling 2 eighth notes, and 3 plus 2 plus 2 is 7. And that gives a slight asymmetry to the beat pattern, but it makes for some exciting music. Dmitri Shostakovich uses the same exact time signature, or meter pattern, in a portion of his Piano Concerto No. 2. The third movement has huge swaths written in this beat pattern known as 7/8 time. Again, if you've seen any time signature in music, you know it is represented by 2 numbers, one on top, one on bottom. The 7 in this case is on top, the 8 is on bottom. It basically means 7 eighth notes per bar. And in this case, he does the opposite grouping of what I did in those Greek folk arrangements. He does 2 plus 2 plus 3. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Here's the third movement of Shostakovich's Piano Concerto No. 2. I'm starting with the 7/8 time signature section. I'll count a little here to show that. He doesn't stay in this time signature throughout the remainder of the movement, though, in case you're planning on counting through the rest of this example. Here it is performed by pianist Mikhail Rudy with Maurice Janssens conducting the London Philharmonic Orchestra. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. That was pianist Mikhail Rudy with Maris Janssens conducting the London Philharmonic Orchestra in Shostakovich's Piano Concerto No. 2, the third movement. And that movement had large sections in 7/8 time, or 7 eighth notes per bar. Those eighth notes were grouped into three major beats, but the beats weren't the same length. The first two beats were 2 eighth notes each, and the last beat was 3 eighth notes. 1-2-1-2-1-2-3, 1-2-1-2-1-2-3. Not only would composers use non-traditional time signatures to avoid predictable rhythmic symmetry, they would also change the time signatures throughout the piece, perhaps every bar or every couple of bars. This gave the rhythm a very unstable feel. It's hard to tap your foot to it because the pulse isn't recurring. That is, the strong beat isn't happening in the same recurring place. This use of multiple time signatures or multiple meters is referred to in music simply as multimeter. A great example of multimeter is the short final movement of Part 1 of Stravinsky's ballet, The Rite of Spring. Hear how difficult it is to predict where the strong beats will hit in this short, tempestuous movement. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today we are exploring one of the most fundamental elements of music, rhythm, in this episode that I've titled Music's Heartbeat. We are also exploring the usage of percussion instruments throughout standard music history. That was Lorne Mazel conducting the Cleveland Orchestra in that recording of the final movement of Part 1 of Stravinsky's ballet, The Rite of Spring. And it was an example of multimeter, where the composer used ever-changing time signatures to avoid predictable rhythmic patterns of the same recurring stress occurring in the same place on each reoccurrence. Multimeter was not that commonly used until the 20th century. It's used a fair bit still today. Again, the intent is to keep the listener guessing, which can be done to a reasonable degree or to an extreme degree. Now, composers before the 20th century found ways to keep the rhythmic elements of a piece of music interesting by inserting occasional anomalies into the recurring stress patterns. They didn't necessarily use multimeter or unorthodox time signatures to do that. They were able to achieve these effects by displacing the accents. Say, you would expect a strong beat to occur every 3 beats, but then the composer, for a brief stint, put strong accents every 2 beats. Things are going along. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. And then you hear 1-2-3, 1-2-3. Instead of putting the accents on every downbeat or every beat 1, the composer put a stress on every 2 beats, and mathematically that works out for 2 bars of 3/4 time, or 3 groups of 2 over the space of what would typically be 2 groups of 3. And it's done without needing to insert a different time signature. This changing from the recurring pattern of 3 beats to 3 groups of 2 strong beats each was known as a hemiola. Oftentimes it signaled the end of a phrase, cluing the listener into the fact that a musical idea or a musical sentence was coming to a close. This was a way to use rhythm to punctuate the end of a phrase, and this was commonly used in the Baroque era. We hear this in another example from Handel's Messiah, in the closing phrase of the instrumental introduction to The Trumpet Shall Sound. Hear how the stress goes from every 3 beats to every 2 beats momentarily. One, two, three, 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 one, two, one, two, one, two, one, two, three, one, two, three. Composers who came along later, who were heavily inspired by the Baroque era, like Felix Mendelssohn, used this technique in their music. Here's an example of a three-beat pattern in Mendelssohn's chorus, Thanks Be to God, from Elijah, and listen to how the strings accent every other beat in this small snippet instead of every three beats. They depart from the three-beat pattern. Now let's hear that again with me counting, in case you didn't catch that. One, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, one, two, one, two, one, two, three, one, two, three. Now one more time, no counting. More commonly, a hemiola, which is a word literally referring to that 3-to-2 ratio, happens in faster forms when the composer or arranger takes that three-part subdivision of the beat in something like a 6-8 time, which stresses every three eighth notes, and instead stresses every other eighth note, meaning that instead of two groups of three, you hear three groups of two. You hear that in this Irish dance I set in 6-8 time. Feel the 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3 groove, and then the stress gets placed on every other subdivision, giving it a 1-2-1-2-1-2 feel momentarily. So it goes from 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-1-2-1-2. 1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2- back and forth constantly between the 6-8 feel of 1-2-3-1-2-3 and the 3-4 feel of 1-2-1-2-1-2, like in Leonard Bernstein's famous America from West Side Story. 1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-1-2-1-2. Listen to this. So that's a little bit of Hemiola. Another way to add rhythmic variety to a piece so the pulse didn't lull the listener into disinterest was to put accents or stress on non-stressed beats. Putting stress on a generally unstressed beat or on the second half of a beat is called syncopation, and this was used commonly throughout music history. It's used a lot in modern music, from fine art to pop music. We tend to enjoy to hear these occasional disruptions in the standard cycles of stress. It keeps our brains and often our emotions engaged in what we are hearing. One interesting example of syncopation is found in Beethoven's Eroica Symphony. That's his Symphony No. 3. Beethoven generally put more emphasis on rhythm in his creation of themes rather than on the melodic element of those themes. Here's the first movement of his Symphony No. 3. You can easily hear the three-beat recurring pattern of stress. He occasionally disguises it with the use of hemiola, but then there's a part where he disguises it by syncopating the rhythm. The orchestra hits on weak beats mostly and rarely on beat one, the beat we would consider the strong beat. In fact, because nothing else is going on in the music, we have no point of reference where one actually is. It gives us this unstable feeling until the orchestra lands back in the standard three pattern. Listen to this little snippet. Thank you. So right there at the end, we heard some pretty intense syncopation out of the three-beat pattern that we were used to. But that movement contains so much syncopation. That's the first movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 3. That recording is John Elliott Gardner conducting the Orchestre Révolutionnaire et Romantique. And syncopation is a place in a musical composition where the stress is put on a generally unstressed beat. A quintessential form of syncopation comes from an extremely rhythmic passage of a 20th century composition. This is, again, from The Rite of Spring by Igor Stravinsky. The part I played earlier was an example of multimeter, where the strong beats and rhythmic symmetry are masked by ever-changing groupings of beats. In other words, it's almost impossible to tap your foot to it. Here in the second movement, the piece starts out very rhythmically, very predictably in terms of being able to tap your toe or your foot along with it. But as you tap your foot, he inserts accents in places where you wouldn't expect a lot of power. So that was some syncopation from The Rite of Spring. Another way composers create rhythmic interest is by use of polyrhythms. This is where one instrument might be dividing the beat into three parts, while another instrument is dividing it into two parts at the same time. This happens commonly in piano music, requiring the pianist to have solid independence of hands in order to do this. A great example of this is Frédéric Chopin's Fantasy Impromptu. The main part of this impressive piano piece requires the left hand to divide the beat into three parts and the right hand to divide it into four parts. So one hand is doing 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and the other hand is doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's hear a brief example. Here it is performed by Arthur Rubinstein. Thank you. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today's episode is titled Music's Heartbeat, and we are exploring one of the most fundamental elements of music, rhythm, as well as the usage of percussion instruments throughout standard music history. That was a little bit of Frédéric Chopin's Fantasy Impromptu, and it contained a great deal of polyrhythms, the right hand playing four notes evenly dividing each beat, while the left hand played three notes evenly dividing each beat. That created a unique rhythmic interest in that piece. Another intriguing way rhythm is treated in compositions throughout history can also be found in the works of Chopin. He wrote many of his piano pieces after particular dance styles of his native Poland, mazurkas and polonaises, as well as piano pieces after the waltz, a popular dance throughout Europe at this time. Though you would generally expect the rhythm of dances to be quite steady and not to slow down or speed up randomly, Chopin's waltzes were not necessarily intended to be danced to. They were solo concert piano pieces, and he expected the piano soloist to fluctuate the tempo, slowing down in key moments for effect and giving back the time taken in other passages. This ebb and flow became known as rubato. It's an Italian word meaning robbed. You rob the tempo in passages by slowing down, but then you usually give back what you robbed by quickening in other areas. Listen to this Chopin waltz, and you can easily count 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. But you'll notice that, to stay with the recording, your counting won't be steady. Here is Artur Rubinstein again, performing Chopin's waltz in C-sharp minor, Opus 64, number 2. Thank you. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today we are exploring this element of rhythm in this episode that I've titled Music's Heartbeat, and we are also exploring the usage of percussion instruments throughout standard music history. That was Frédéric Chopin's waltz, Opus 64, No. 2, in C-sharp minor, and it was an example of rubato, the pulse of a piece of music slowing down and speeding up, an ebb and a flow to the beat. When we come back, we're going to discuss the percussion instruments of the orchestra and explore the interesting usage of these instruments throughout standard music history. We've also saved all three of our show's regular segments for this half of the episode. Our Sounds of Scripture will explore the percussion instruments of the Bible and their function even in leading ensembles. Our Classroom Corner will discuss the benefits and usage of percussion in the general music classroom. And for our Backstage Banter, we'll take a tour of the drum kit with a local jazz drummer who is here at Armstrong Auditorium this week for a jazz concert. We'll be right back.